Welcome to the History Hotline, a direct line to a better understanding of all things Black history and beyond. Welcome to another episode of the History Hotline. My name is Deanna Lynn Cook, and as always, I will be your host today. Now, from the title, you'll know I'll be joined by a special guest, Paul Henriquez, later on in the episode. But first, a story all about Pardner.
Pardner System by Elsie Anderson. Pardner, partner, so-so, whatever. Me like it. The partner, or so-so, or money go round, was brought to the Caribbean from West Africa by the slaves them in the 17th century. It is an independent way of saving. The slaves use this way of saving to help ends meet and for a rainy day. This system still exists up to this day, but different islands have different names to the same concept. Now, me hear say the Caribbean people them a take it stateside and beyond. The partner thing consists of a banker who collect the money from the members them weekly or monthly, and it could last a few weeks, 6 months, or even up for a whole year, depending on how many people are join up. This merry-go-round thing was brought to the motherland in the 50s, so the Caribbean people them club together as a community and carry on with the tradition. Back then, them priority was to buy them own home, as they struggle to find adequate accommodation due to the fact they were told every single time, no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. So them throw them little partner and save hard to get the deposit to buy their first home, as traditional lending was not available. They continue to work hard, doing many jobs to help throw the little partner, and eventually buy them house outright. Throwing the partner helped immigrants in so many ways. It also helped them buy furniture, send money and barrel back a yard, holidays, save up for wedding, and a whole heap of things them.
So a little bit more on Pardner, the money saving system, what it is, what it's used for, and where it came from. That story was taken from Elsie Henderson, who wrote that story, and it's collated within a kind of collection of stories called Pardner Money Stories and Poems. And without further ado, I would like to introduce our special guest on to the podcast today. We have the wonderful Paul Henriquez. Paul was born to Jamaican parents in London. He's a UI UX expert with over 20 years in the tech field and a lead UX designer on projects for clients such as Nestle, Unilever and Estee Lauder. In the past, he's launched an e-commerce platform for eco-friendly products and later launched an independent clothing label, as well as being a finalist in 2024 at the Black Tech Awards FinTech Person of the Year. But he's not really going to talk about any of those things in particular today, or maybe actually the fact that he is of Jamaican descent. But we're here to talk all about Pardner and the Pardner app. So here is Paul and my interview with him.
So I'd like to welcome Paul Henriquez on the podcast today. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Deanna. Thank you for the invite. Glad to be here.
So, Paul, you are born and raised in London to Jamaican parents. And you're here today primarily because I found you via social media because you started an app called Pardner. Do you want to start off by telling us what is Pardner?
Sure. So Pardner, essentially, it is a communal money saving and management system. I know it's Pardner, you know it's Pardner, primarily because of our Jamaican backgrounds. But this method of saving has got multiple names, right? The academic name for it is rotating savings and credit, but you know that's a kind of like official name for it. But it's got many names all over the world. In some places, it's called like South America, we call it Tanda. In some places of Africa, it's called Hagbad, it's called Ajah, it's called Susu. It's got many names all over the world. And what exactly is it? Right, so how it works is a group of people come together and they decide to save a fixed amount each month for a fixed period of time. Right, there's one person who would be managing this group, and so all the individuals who have come together in this group, they would deposit their fixed amount with this person. We know that person as the banker, and they would deposit their funds with this person, and then the banker, the organizer, would give the pooled amount to one person in the group. Next month, everyone will come together again and deposit their fixed amount with the banker, and he would give it to the second person in line. Now, this process would continue until everyone has had a chance to receive the proceeds of the pot, basically. So essentially, for the first person who received, it's like he's getting a loan from the group, right? Because they've had their payout first. For the last person to receive, they are being helped to achieve a savings goal. So, people join these groups for different reasons. Maybe someone has an immediate bill they need to sort out first, so they get their payout first. Or maybe someone's saving up for a holiday or for something that they know is coming in the future, and then they'll get their payout last. But it's, that's how it works, basically, and that's what we know as a partner.
Absolutely. You know what? It's interesting because I always, as you said, knew it and understood it to be a thing, but I always wondered why would anybody go first and take the money first? But actually, you're right. It's a loan, or the earlier people.
Yeah.
They're getting a loan for something they need urgently or sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in groups in the past where, someone is literally has got a bill they need to pay, right? And so they would get their payout first. And like I said, different people have different reasons why they would join the group or they'll join a partner group. That's it, really.
And I think my grandparents, they had a partner to buy their first home when they came from Jamaica. I think my granddad might have been the banker. He was big on organising a group, some food and some dominoes. But why did they have to use that? I mean, the stories are because of...
Yeah, so, when Caribbean people came to the UK in the late 40s and early 50s and beyond, we was actually locked out of access to, mainstream finance, we couldn't get the loans to buy things. And even when we did, we wouldn't get the same rate as our neighbour, basically. They would be on a good rate. And if we could get a loan, we would be on a ridiculous rate, right? So we just turned to the system, that we used back home, which was partner, organize it amongst ourselves. I guess we also had like a distrust of the system back then because of how we was treated. You just turn to your community, people that you know and trust, basically.
Absolutely. And I can imagine, I don't know, that it's that generation as well, the way that they kind of see money, and even now having people talk about having money under their mattress. I think a safety and a security knowing that the physical cash is viewable and they can feel it and it's tangible to them.
Yeah, again, you're right. It was that tangibility. And again, I would say again, it was that kind of trust element in it, imagine we've all come over to this country, and you don't the only people that you truly know is the people in your community from back home, or the people who look like you, talk like you, going through the same things as you do or you have been going through, with regards to housing, with regards to banking, with regards to employment. And so, we turn to each other because, there's that comfort there. And so, when it came to, needing to access finance, we obviously turn to us, you know, and the system that we use back home.
I've noticed that whilst my grandparents used it in that generation, mm-hmm. and my kind of parents' generation in their like 60s, there's still a few partners in Birmingham kicking around that are going strong in like the physical form. Mm-hmm. I've noticed it's not something that like my generation or the ones in between kind of picked up and continued. And I wonder if this is kind of where your app comes in.
Absolutely. see, that's the thing. What we're trying to do with the partner app is not only to obviously help people who need that financial boost, who need that financial help, but also continue the legacy. Imagine back in the day, when we first arrived in this country, we couldn't get access to finance, and it took us a while to actually get a partner going. We missed out on so much, it's the very early days, and I'm talking about things like getting on the housing ladder, right? Yeah. And that has had knock-on effects to this day, that race-based wealth inequality from back then has affected how we are now, right? So what I'm trying to do with Partner App is to kind of instill that sense of, I won't say urgency, but for me, it is a sense of urgency, because I want young people to realize that there is a system that they can turn to and a method that they can use that is within their community. You have the things like the Klarnas that are really targeting young people today. And I'm not really a fan of that buy now, pay later system. And there's been evidence that particular method of payment has had a detrimental effect on young people as well, in terms of their kind of financial well-being and financial health. With the partner app, we're just trying to introduce it to young people. That being said, I do know I've come across lots of people, I'd say maybe in the late 30s onwards, who still do partner. Obviously have been in groups or seen their parents in partner groups, and just continued the tradition. Yeah, because obviously in today's day and age, we have access to credit and et cetera. But we still do partner, which I always find quite interesting. And we're just here to continue that tradition. I'm going to say, though, I do want partner to be established as a real mainstream method of financial money management. That's our kind of ultimate goal, but we're looking at our community first and just trying to establish ourselves here.
Absolutely. And you have to, start with, I guess, the people it's kind of familiar to. if we've seen it for generations working and understanding it, for it to then...
Absolutely. Even our company name, Partner, you mention that to some people and they immediately get it. Yeah. Yep. Immediately know what we're about and what we're trying to do. And even when I've spoken to, brothers and sisters from, Ghana, Nigeria, whatever, once you start describing what it is, and they get it, because I say, oh, you mean Ajo, or you mean, whatever the name of it is in West Africa or wherever, So, yeah, exactly. We already get it, so it would make sense to concentrate on us first.
Yeah, definitely. I always find it interesting when there's similarities kind of across, this is beyond the African diaspora, this is, a global similarity in this financial system. It's like, the drink sorrel, like everyone drinks a form of sorrel. Like South Americans, they drink it in Africa, in the Caribbean, and it's kind of, I guess it's like the sorrel of financial world.
I've never heard it described like that, but that's I might use that in some marketing.
Taglines.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? When I first started this and I was doing some research into it, when I was growing up, I just thought it was a Jamaican thing, right? But then, you came to find out that it's actually conducted worldwide, South America, Asia, you know, obviously throughout Africa. I just find it quite interesting, you know, that they've got these siloed pockets of communities who don't know about each other, but we're still doing this very similar saving system, but it's got different names.
And we've carried it too. We've all carried it into the Western world. We've carried it to the US, exactly, or to Britain. Or,
exactly, yeah. Fascinating.
Definitely. Why did you, you kind of touched on it, but why did you decide to start Partner or make it into an app form as opposed to, I don't know, another form of
financial? You know what? There's a few reasons. You know, as you mentioned, I'm into tech. I've got a history of working in tech for over 20 odd years. So there's that connection there. I've always been entrepreneurial. I've always tried to build things. You know, years ago I had I built an e-commerce website, and that we were selling nice, eco-friendly products, that kind of stuff. I had a t-shirt brand. I think everyone did back in the day, but I did as well. But the fun part for me was not only designing the t-shirt, was building the website that sold the t-shirt. So that's what I was interested in. So when it, but I've always, for years, many years, I've wanted to do something with Pardner, right? Like digitize it or modernize it in some way, right?
Yeah.
Back then, I didn't know how to do it. I know what to do, but the technology wasn't really there. In the last few years, we've obviously had the, you know, the cost of living crisis, you know, which has meant that people needed something, needed a financial method that could help them through certain situations, right? And I just thought Pardner was perfect for that. And there was also the fact that, you know, the banking deregulation meant that companies like Pardner could use technology to access data, yeah, and build products on top of the data that the banks, you know, usually held quite closely. You know, they didn't want to release that data. Now we can get access to it and build on top of it. So all these kind of things happened all at kind of once in the last few years. So I thought, right, now is the time. So, you know, we slowly built it. You know, me and my co-founder, D Otis. And yeah, we've just slowly built up from then.
Brilliant. And in terms of kind of doing that work and getting it together, and I don't understand any of the tech or any of them things you said about banking regulation.
Okay, right, yeah.
I can just do the history. But what were the kind of challenges in creating maybe an app like that? Or I don't know if you had to convince people that this would be something that people would take up and use. And
So there are multiple challenges, right? Where shall I start? Any startup is going to be really, really hard in the early days, right? And that is, you know, and that's no different for us or what we're doing. On top of that, we're self-funding it for now, right? So, called bootstrapping. When you self-fund your project, you're bootstrapping it. So, which has meant that our resources are like very limited, but it's taught us to be very lean and to be very purposeful in what we do, right? You know, but also it meant also our progress is slightly slower than I would have personally liked, but you know, we're patient. Having lack of resources is a challenge. Building a financial app is a challenge because you've got lots of regulations that you've got to be wary of and you've got to adhere to. You know, I've had multiple conversations with the FCA, etc., you know, who didn't understand the business model, you know, and I had to kind of really explain it and, you know, send them diagrams of the flow and what it means and all that stuff, you know. So all that was very difficult. So getting over those hurdles was a very big challenge. And it's still a challenge today, you know. But we're muddling through.
Absolutely. Sounds like it will take off in a sense of there is just so much behind it and it's kind of, it just makes sense.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned something, you know, how did we know it's going to work or, you know, how do we convince people? Well, the only thing that we needed testing was if, because people already do this method of saving already, right? Yeah. So the only thing that we needed to really test is if they would use an app for their saving, right?
Yeah.
The older generation, when I say older, I mean the older, like in the 60s or whatever, or 70 years old or whatever, who may still do partner, they may not be the market to use an app for this, right? The younger generation who do use apps are very familiar with apps and may already use some form of financial app. They're not familiar with partner. So there's that kind of challenge, you know? So we're just reaching out and do that kind of education piece. But
The Venn diagram of
yes, trying to get both. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And you mentioned, sorry, about kind of Klarna and these, like, mm-hmm. not just Klarna, but, you know, these kind of buy now, pay later
mm-hmm.
setups and the kind of way that partner might be potentially teaching or the value of financial literacy and things like that. And mm-hmm. I wondered if you want to speak more about that. It's something that it really bothers me because the way that they market some of them are so bright and colourful and it's actually quite serious.
It is.
You know, it's borrowing serious. Money.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, no, you're right. And basically with partner, we're teaching, well, there's the value of your community, yeah. And when you achieve, everyone in your group achieves, you know, that, what's that when the rising tides floats all boats or something like that. But it also teaches to be patient, yeah, and to save up for the things that you need, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in certain aspects in partner, if you're obviously the first to receive your partner draw, you know, then, you know, you can use that money for the things that you want and need, right? But you're still committed to that group, yeah?
Yeah.
And, you know, with something like Klarna or with something like a credit card, you know, you can go down a rabbit hole. And I know there was, like, a few years back, there was a crackdown on, like, payday lenders. You remember, back in the day, they were, like, running rampant. Right.
Yeah, there's loads.
Yeah. But the government cracked down on them, but they still exist. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, the payday lenders still exist, and you know, the promise of getting that quick cash right now, but you're paying these sky high fees. It's crazy. But then you know, a lot of people get caught in that kind of cycle of payday lenders, and then you're trapped because you're paying these such sky high fees. You end up probably worse off than you was before. You know, with building a partner, yes, you pay a fee, but it's like a fraction of what you would, you know, if you're using like a, you know, pay or credit card or, you know, pay their lender, for example. So, you know, we're just trying to teach the value of being smart with your money, basically, and you know, the value of patience, the value of community and trust, basically, yeah.
And not, I think I don't know what the opposite of instant gratification is, but yeah, patience.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have everything now.
Yeah, exactly. There are some things that you can actually save up for and then get it, you know, in a few months. You don't need it right now, you can get it in a few months, you know. And that's what we're trying to teach the value of that.
Brilliant. Have you seen or kind of been able to think about who has kind of signed up and who is using the app, or kind of is it the demographic you thought it might be? Is it the kinds of people you assumed it
would be? Yes. So like we haven't really done any kind of marketing at all because, you know, we're still kind of building mode and we're still, you know, testing things out. But, you know, all the sign-ups we get, just based on the names alone, I can kind of tell that it's of our community or, you know, the West African people kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I just assume that maybe they maybe follow me on Twitter or follow their partner app or someone's retweeted something, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how I assume that they've come across. Yeah, we haven't done any kind of marketing yet. We will do, And then it'd be very interesting. And you know, when we do our marketing, yes, initially we are going to focus on the Caribbean and African communities first, you know, and establish ourselves here, you know, before we, you know, move out to the wider community. But yeah, it is within our community.
Brilliant. And it's interesting with, I guess, the term kind of community, because Pardner back in the day would have been people that are in your area or yeah. close to you, because you have to get there to send to bring the money regularly.
Exactly. It would have been people in your local vicinity of your community, your church, you know, things like that. Yeah, so absolutely.
And this completely widens out community in that sense, because you don't need to be
close. It absolutely does. It just means that your relatives in Birmingham, whereas in London, can join you now, you know.
Yep.
There's communities that are obviously spread out, you know, so we don't have to, it doesn't have to be, you know, the person who lives around the corner, because you have to give them, deliver them the cash and that kind of stuff. So it's a lot easier.
Do you know, by any chance, you might not know, if you don't, like, where did the money system come from? Like, do we know all the way back, or
you know, who started it? You know, we say it started off in Africa, I'm going to say even 1,000 years ago. But even, I know around that time, there's records of similar systems being used in Japan, around that, like, 1,000 years ago. So it has been going for literally generations, you know, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 years. I'm not even joking, you know.
Yeah.
So we can't put it down to one African country or one African nation who started it off, but it would have been somewhere there. But yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it stood the test of time then, because
exactly. This it obviously works, right? Mm. And you know, when we was taken to the Caribbean, we took the system with us. You know, and even in, like, South America, and I mean, I don't know, again, I don't know who in, for example, Bolivia or Mexico, how did they start it off? Where did they hear about it first? We don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And how it survived something like the period of enslavement, where I'm not assuming there was much money to be saved, do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
these periods, and to travel again to South America potentially, or to Europe.
But what did endure was the community spirit. That's what endured, right? Obviously, yeah. Pardner is built on top of being in a community and being beholden to that community and having trust in that community. That is a thing that has endured throughout all our, you know, history of being in Africa and being in enslaved people in the Americas. It stood the test of time, basically.
So, and it's only right that if it's going to continue, it has to then move with these generations.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, technology is moving on. And I want us to, you know, be at the forefront of technology. Yeah, I don't want us to miss out. And, you know, I want to bring Pardner into the digital age, into the future. That's what we're doing. You know, there was I don't know if it's still going, I think it's going on to the end of the year. There's an exhibition in the Bank of England Museum of all about Pardner and its history in the UK. And we've got a little feature in there as well. Our app is featured in there as a feature of Pardner. So, you know, we really believe that's true. We believe we are the future of this. And I'll say that, knowing that there will always be people who prefer to do it manually, you know, which is fine, which is great, you know. But young people today, we want to bring young people into this method of saving. And obviously, they're glued to their phones. You know, they're familiar with and comfortable using fintech apps. You know, we want to be one of the apps that they use regularly.
Definitely. You know, I didn't know that Bank of England even had a museum. But that it'll be interesting then to see that exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So I will put details of that in the show notes if you are listening and interested. I had absolutely no idea.
They've got a museum. A couple of years ago, they had a history of slavery in the UK and how it related to the monetary system in this country. And
because a lot of the banks were born out of that. And I've read articles about that from the Bank of England, but I didn't know it came from a museum department.
Their museum, they kind of really focused on how they obviously funded some of these slave ships and these slavery exhibitions. Funnily enough, if I remember correctly, the Bank of England, they loaned some merchant the money to go on a slavery exhibition, and he went and got his slaves. He went and enslaved some African people. But I think what happened was he couldn't pay the loan back, and so what ended up happening, the bank ended up owning his property in Vercombe. So at one point, the Bank of England owned slaves. So that's how deep it goes, you know?
Definitely.
It's
only right there sharing that.
They should be whipped for that. You know what I mean? The banks should be whipped for that. And during, when we came over to this country in, the late 40s and, during the Windrush generation, it was the banks who wouldn't lend us money to do certain things. And so it led to us, turn into Pardner. And this exhibition kind of details of that as well.
It's interesting that what the banks would lend and who they
lend it to,
and then who they won't.
For
what they need to build lives here.
Tell me about it.
It's interesting. Yeah, really, really, really an interesting history. And I think, as you've said, Pardner will remedy a few issues.
Mm-hmm.
One, kind of upholding this history and culture, which I think is just so important.
Yeah.
But also, I think, bringing a younger generation to a more community mindset. I think that also would be quite a beneficial thing for society now.
Absolutely.
It's apparent that we're a lot more individualistic, I think, as a global society than we've ever been. And I don't think it's for the better.
Yeah. And you know what? I think in the UK as well, so I'm really pleased with the fact that you're really keen on history, especially Black history in the UK, because not enough young people are, and a lot of what our pioneers in this country went through and the achievements and things we established, it's kind of getting lost to history, because young people, maybe not curious about the history in the UK, I know they're not taught in school. And so it's up to us to really make sure that our legacy in this country is not lost, or it's not whitewashed, or it's not, hidden under the carpet, So we've got to bring these things to the fore.
Definitely. It's a challenge. I think there are kind of like, you said about the, our parents, grandparents' generation that came here and were barred because of race from, achieving certain points at buying a house and getting certain jobs and things like that that have held them back financially.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of our education, there's been so many things that we haven't been able to access. And it's difficult with our history in Britain to even know where to start. I think once you've got a starting point, whether that's, a documentary, a book, a podcast to start with.
Absolutely.
You can kind of, start and then figure out what you need to know next and what interests you, because not all of Black British history is interesting to everyone. Some people want to learn about protest and some people want to learn about Pardner,
That's true.
So I think it's a difficult one, but I think having, studied history now for a while,
mm-hmm.
I've seen it is changing positively. There was this 2020 moment that catapulted a lot of important messages in history, and Fortunately, I'm seeing a pullback. I'm feeling a pullback. I hope we can somehow keep up momentum. But I think, you know, it's not just on one set of people to tell these histories. You know, if you're in the NHS, tell the histories of Black doctors and nurses.
Yeah.
You know, you being in tech and interested in finance, you get that history of partner. You know, we can all have a hand in that. As you said, community-wise, we can all have a hand in telling these histories because they're spread across so many different disciplines.
That's true. That's a good point. Excellent.
So, well, here's to hoping that, that continues.
Yeah.
Despite pushback and, you know, we've got things like Notting Hill Carnival, hopefully we can hold on to things and really big cultural events that happen like
Absolutely, man.
So I think that is everything I had to ask you today, Paul. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. There's been so many gems in this episode, and I'm sure guests will agree that, you know, whilst you're not necessarily a historian, you've definitely brought us a history of the culture, brought us the importance of community, finance and tech. I think, you know, that's, yeah, top tier guest today.
Thank you so much for joining
joining us.
Do you know what? Like tech, history is for everyone. So that's why I'm here.
Absolutely. Exactly. And yeah, I guess a podcast marries tech and history.
It does. Absolutely.
Here we are. I wondered where people can find you, where they can, you know, get involved with Pardna, find out more about it, social media, website, and the app.
Yeah, we are in the app stores, in the App Store and Google Play. Just search for Pardna, and it's the purple logo with the P. You can check out our website, pardna.com. Pardna is spelled P-A-R-D-N-A.com. We are on socials. Do you know what? I really need to be more active on socials. I'm really not like So check out Pardna on Twitter, as I still call it. I don't really call it X, which is /Pardna, P-A-R-D-N-A.
Brilliant. I'll tag all of that in the show notes as well. Cool. If you do just want to find that. Also, just on Pardna and the spelling, why did you choose, not that I disagree, with Pardna N-A instead of E-R?
Do you know what? A shorter URL is always the best. Brand-wise, it's better. And, you know, sometimes it is spelled like that.
Brilliant. There was no right or wrong answer. I was just curious. Because even when I was writing it in my notes, I was like, go between the two spellings.
The Pardna app, the spelling, why it exists, the history, and its current iteration in app form. That was all for my conversation with Paul Henriquez. A big thank you, Paul, for joining me on the episode this week. So from me and Paul this week, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Cheers.
Bye.
That's it for another episode of the History Hotline. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you listen to, or tell a friend to tell a friend. To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at The History Hotline on Instagram and at The History HL on Twitter. The History Hotline is hosted by me, Deanna Lynn Cook. Research and marketing done by Zakia Riaz. Production by Waylon Mackenzie Witter. And original music provided by Royal Sounds. Sponsored by Musetopia. History Hotline.